disasters and emergencies happen to good people like you every day. The frequency of these events are increasing at an astonishing rate. Now is the time to take responsibility for preparing and empowering yourself for the inevitable. Welcome to the Survive University Podcast, where we provide an education in preparation, giving you the tools to get ready, be ready, and stay ready. Now, let's get on with today's lesson.
Listen up, my preps. Welcome to another episode of Survive University Podcast, where we discuss research-based solutions focused on preparation for protecting your life and your health during an emergency or disaster. Our topics cover all things survival as we discuss with industry professionals on how to help you triumph over the toughest times in your life. I'm your co-host, Maine J, the OG, aka the Ordinary Guy, with my co-host, Hakeem Isler. On today's episode, we talk about being naked and afraid. Our friend Hakeem Isler was the first person of color to be on the hit TV show Naked and Afraid. We want to learn about his experiences on the show and some of the lessons he walked away with that helped him to improve his life moving forward. Now turn on your ears and put on your thinking caps. Class is in session.
What's up? What's up? What's up?
What's up, sir? How you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Drinking this dandelion blend. Dandelion blend. Making me feel really, really, really uplifted right now. So feeling that.
That's cool. That's cool. I could see you in the crisscross applesauce position with your fingers touching each other. You know,
the yoga type I meditate position. Every day, man.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Really?
Yeah, I do. I do. That's the real. And actually, we'll talk about that in this episode because, you know, meditation and breath work is important.
So wait a minute. So meditation, true meditation, you don't just do it for, you know, you don't wear the garb and, you know, listen to spa-like music. It's a real thing. It's a real thing.
I don't do. Right, I don't wear the garb. I don't know what the garb is, but wear that. No.
Well, you know how it is. What you see on TV is real, you know. Anyway, want to focus on you today, sir. One of the cool things that I have talked about before and I speak highly of you about is seeing you on Naked and Afraid, the TV show. I know the first time I saw it, I did a double take because up to that point, I hadn't seen anybody of color on that show. So when you popped on the screen, it kind of caught my interest. And the situation that you was in was really unique also. And I sat there, of course, with my spouse, and we talked about, you know, I talked about what I would have done if I was in that situation, because, you know, I know everything to do in a survival situation when I'm naked. And I don't have anything to do. I mean, I sat there and I was like, well, why doesn't he just do this? And why? Because, you know, I know. But at the same time, learned a lot. And some of the patience that you exuded was unheard of. I mean, you carried yourself with such dignity and grace, if you can say that, in that type of situation, that it almost felt like the show was scripted. It almost felt like it was manipulated in such a way where it wasn't real. But I know from my research and anybody who watches the show know that, it's real. It's very real. And you walked away from that experience with some life lessons, some serious life lessons that I talked to you about, but I think everybody should share. I mean, they should get a chance to hear because it may be something that's beneficial to them. It's not just about living out in the wild and, you know, fending for yourself, which is a very important factor, part of it. But at the same time, there's a physical, there's a mental, and there's a spiritual element to it that I'd love for you to discuss today. So without further ado, what was it like being naked and afraid, Mr. Hakeem Isler? Drop some knowledge bombs.
Man, it was tough. It was really, really tough. You know, going out there, I didn't know that I would get on the show, first off. Mm-hmm. And then when that came to a reality, I didn't know where I was going until like maybe a few weeks out.
Okay, hold on. This is going to be a good show, guys, but I got to start from the beginning. What made you apply or want to be on a show called Naked and Afraid? What about that? I mean, what about that appeal to you?
A friend of mine, a friend, special forces buddy, was and I were talking, and he had seen the show and I had not seen the show. And he had he started talking about the show, and he was saying how it was crazy and people were naked, and I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. And then somehow we got into this portion of the conversation where he was like, hey, man, why don't more black people do stuff like this out in the woods? And, you know, then we started to talk about his special forces career and how there was very few black people in special forces. And he had not seen a lot of black people in the woods. He's Caucasian. So, and, you know, this is a really good friend of mine. We go out and we drink coffee all the time. And we'll just chat about life. And so, you know, it's one alpha mentality and another alpha mentality. So immediately I started getting into that, like, yo, what? I can do that. I can do that.
I double dare you. I triple dare you.
And so we were like, so I was like, you know, I can do this, you know. And he was like, yeah, but, you know, I don't see it. And I, you know. And so I went home that night and I had sought out the show on the internet and I found it and I found an application. I filled out an application just so the next time we sat down to have some coffee, I could be like, yo, I tried out for the show and I didn't get it, you know. But lo and behold, like a month or two went by and they called me and they were like, hey, we want to interview you. And so they started interviewing me and they liked what I had to say. And they were like, okay, we want you to be on the show. And so I was like, whoa, game time, you know? And I was in it to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it also spoke really loudly to my desire to want to see more people of color doing shows like this and representing in a way that allowed more people of color to see that it was possible and that it's something that we should be capable of. Now, I'm not saying that everyone should be, you know, I want people of color to be naked out in the woods. But if someone can see this, me in this very extreme circumstance, maybe they can have that moment where they're like, well, the least I can do is put a tent in my backyard. Right? So this dude out here in the middle of the cut, naked, walking around barefoot, you know, eating snails. Mm-hmm. The least I can do is go to the park, pitch a tent in front of a campfire and hang out for a little while. And so that representation was really important for me. And okay. So that's how that process started.
How many times have you been on the show?
I did two episodes.
Okay, and where were you located?
First one, I was in the Himalayan mountains in India, and then the second one, I was in Colombia, in the jungles of Colombia.
Glutton for Punishment, did it two times.
Okay. Yeah.
So what was the experience? I mean, after they called you and they said they want you on the show, did you start training? Or, and if you did start training, how do you train for something like that? Is it there's no book out there. Is there a Naked and Afraid guide for dummies or something like that? Or how'd you start preparing?
No, but that's a brilliant idea. Yeah. So I'm going to write that book.
Okay. Go for it.
So the way you start preparing for real was I had to first recognize the reality of the situation. And so I had done my training, my ninja training, with my teacher in ninjutsu in his yard or his backyard. He had a bunch of land behind his house. And so I learned a lot of skill sets that way. But then I joined the army and then I learned a lot of skill sets in the army. And then I went to SEER school, which is the survival, evade, resistance, and escape school for the military. And it's a special school that not everyone gets to go to, where you learn how to survive and evade and resist interrogation and escape if you need to. And so I learned a lot of skill sets there. And then I got out and I continued on with survival skill sets. However, the average person in a survival situation or learning at these schools, they have several benefits that you wouldn't think of until you do like a show like Naked and Afraid, which are, I have shoes on, you know, you have clothes on your back, you have like a knife, you have like some other items, rope and things of that nature. In Naked and Afraid, you get one item per person. It's you and one other person. And that's it. And you have no shoes. You have no clothes. You have no water. You have no shelter. You have to figure it out all on your own. And you only got these two tools, whatever they are. And so it changed the dynamic. So I realized that I had to train that way. I had to train, you know, not necessarily naked, but at least, you know, walking around outdoors with shorts on and really understanding what it's like to have bugs crawling all over you and so on and so forth. Walking barefooted on different terrains and really understanding what it's like to have to deal with that to the best of my ability. Understanding what it's like to not have food but still need to work on a consistent basis so that you can build your shelter so that you can find food. All those things were not the norm for me or for anybody. So I had to really assess and start practicing those skill sets and try to get myself ready. But I will burst everyone's bubble right now. As ready as I thought I was only 1% of what I needed to really be ready.
Knowledge bombs. We tend to drop them a lot around here, and we appreciate your feedback and support for the information, interviews, and perspectives shared. Become a Patreon supporter for Survive University and get additional exclusive content not shared during the podcast. Patreon subscribers also get information on other Survive University products and projects before they're released to the public. So visit patreon.com/Survive University and join us as we continue on this journey to get ready, be ready, and stay ready like never before. I was going to ask you that. So how much of it was physical and how much of it was mental in your preparation for the actual show?
It was both. Okay. But it's like walking. It's like when you start saying to yourself, hey, I'm going to send a man or a woman to the moon. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like so out there, like you can't even fathom what you're really going to need to make that happen, you know, just by making that statement. And so there was so much that I didn't foresee. There were so many things that I had to deal with, you know, and that was really, really challenging. It was really difficult, and it was a lot more mental than it was physical. But the physical is integrated into your mental. So as you were suffering physically, it also was having an effect on you mentally, and vice versa. As you were suffering mentally, you were having physical effects as well. So I had to deal with, you know, all of that, and me and my partner, you know.
Okay. Well, let me actually, and I'm glad you mentioned that. So show is called Naked and Afraid, folks. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's a very interesting show, and look for the episode with Mr. Hakeem Isler. Just from a normal standpoint as a male sitting on my couch watching this show, it's called Naked and Afraid, where they pair two people together, one female and one male together, naked in the woods, based on the premise is based on Adam and Eve, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And you know what they did? You know what I'm saying? You know, that's how we got the world. You know, they got down. So when you first got out there, was there any bow chicka wow wow action going on? Was there any? I mean, serious up. Did thoughts like that cross your mind? And if they did or did not, what prevented them from doing so, or what made it more worse, or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question to some degree. I mean, I get that question asked a lot. As a matter of fact, here we are several years later, and 2 days ago on my Instagram, somebody had reached out to me because they saw the show. Uh-huh. And they were like, man, I know you were doing something with that girl. And I was like, man, that's crazy. So all these years later, right?
People get still, your mind out the gutter, man.
Yeah, exactly. And so, being psychological warfare in the military, one of the things that you learn is about this Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Uh-huh. And that base level, it's in the shape of a pyramid, and on the base level, it has things like water and air and shelter, like your base needs to survive. Mm-hmm. Nowhere on that base level is procreation. That's because I learned this for real. Like, I had known this and I knew how to use it, mm-hmm. but I didn't really deeply understand it until I went on the show. You physiologically can't and mentally cannot think about procreation because your body instinctively knows that procreation isn't a reality until you have the resources to sustain life mm-hmm. on a consistent basis. So therefore, what I'm saying is that you don't think about sex and having children because your brain and your body knows that it cannot sustain its own life. So until you can sustain your own life, and then, you know, in the lives of your tribe, that's the only time that procreation can then start. Your brain is wired that way, right? It's wired to not think about those things until it has the resources, because procreation takes resources.
Yes, it does.
Right? If I'm out there being a rabbit, you know, trying to make some baby rabbits, right? then I need some pellets, some rabbit pellets.
You need some water. You need some energy.
Yeah. So
you need a cigarette.
And I mean, we understand it. I mean, like, you get a mom and a dad after a long day's work, you know, come home and they get into bed. You know, ain't nobody thinking about no dang on, you know, let's get in the mood, because all your resources are depleted, right? So, you know, just think about that in perspective. You know, we out there in the cut on the side of the Himalayan mountains. People can't even fathom what that was, because I couldn't fathom what that was. I'm 13 or 14, 14 hours, sorry, away from the nearest real city, right? I'm up in the Himalayan mountains, and this, you know, the closest thing is this little tiny small village nobody's ever heard of called Jageshwar. And we're like out there.
Yeah.
I think we were like, I want to say we were like 8,000 feet up or something like that. And I mean, you know, the air is thin, everything, you just can't even imagine. It's cold, it's hot, it's everything. You know, you're on the side of a mountain. And so it's crazy. You can even, you know, looking at this person, even though my partner was a pretty young woman, you know, the idea of doing anything other than you, dude, I don't have any clothes on. There are like flies on my balls. and I have, you know, splinters in my feet. Yeah. You know, I have cold air, you know, blowing all over me right now. I mean, you just can't think about procreation or doing anything sexual when you are literally in the process of saying to your brain is trying to figure out how you're going to survive.
That makes perfect sense, my friend. And I only ask that question because I know there are listeners out there who are interested in that.
Yeah.
But I already knew that to be the answer. I did that for those individuals who have a one-track mind.
Yeah.
Just for you guys, I wanted to make sure I cater to all of the audience to make sure that I answer all the questions that you may have or may be thinking about. So I'm glad we got that off the table to get the foolishness out the way so we can get down to business.
Hey guys, are you feeling overwhelmed? I know I am. There's a lot of information here for us to take in. So we ask all of our guests at the end of the show to give us some valuable lessons that we can practice and work on. You'll find that information on our Patreon account, where we would like to invite you to come over for $4 a month. You can join our Patreon account. You can help support us, keep us doing this good work, and then also learn some valuable skills. If you're looking to get more education, get into some courses, join us at our SurviveUniversity.com website. Again, that's SurviveUniversity.com, where you can gain the knowledge that you need to really grow your survival expertise.
If you have like really those cool screensavers, that pop up on your smart TV or on your, you know, just your computer, and they're beautiful, picturesque images.
Yeah.
There's a difference between seeing that image and being at that location. When you're looking at an image and you see the ice cap mountains and it's like, oh, that's beautiful, I would love to be there. And you're in a location where there are ice cap mountains and wind blowing is, you know, 20 below. It's like, it's a totally different experience.
Your word.
It's like, let me take this picture and get the hell out of Dodge. But so I can relate to that. And you comparing it to Maslow's hierarchy of needs makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you get home and, you know, you had a hard day, you ain't feeling it. You know, even though society wants to make it seem like everything is always right for that type of situation, when it gets down to it, when you get into a survival mode, there are certain things that aren't important to you. And and sex is not one of them when you're trying to figure out when your next meal is going to be.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So if you're in that situation, my friend, and you said that you have to kind of shift, what did you find out? What really mattered to you when you didn't have anything?
Yeah. So there are these law of threes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they call it the rule. Some people call it the rule of threes, depending on what book you're reading. And it's it goes like 3 minutes without air, you know, 3 hours without shelter, 3 days without water, and, you know, 3 weeks without food. And then there's another one. There are two less known ones. One is 3 seconds without making a critical decision, which would actually come before air. And then there's a final one, which is like, you know, 3 weeks or 3 months without socialization. You know, people need to be in some sort of tribe, mm-hmm. you know, most people, you know, the outliers are like hermits, you know, and people are like, man, that's cool. You know, I can live like a hermit. Nah, you know, most people aren't built that way. They're special individuals. So I had heard that and I understood that, but the reality of living that and what that really meant on a deep level, again, was something that I didn't really gather until I was partaking in this event.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I found was going to this idea of, you know, 3 minutes without air, what does that mean? And I started to look at the situation as, well, first off, I'm way up in the mountains, so the air is thinner. So I had a different relationship with oxygen but in my body and what I was capable of doing because I lacked the oxygen to perform to the standard that I would on sea level, at sea level, right? So that changed the dynamic. My performance, my physical performance was lessened because I did not have the oxygen in my blood to be able to perform at the level that I was used to performing at. And I had not taken that into account, right? So I had to deal with that. Secondly, the anxiety and the fear. When they say go, they're like, all right, you're out here, game on. And you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys gonna help a little bit, right? So, nope. We're basically here to record and document your misery. You know?
Oh, wow.
No high fives, no pat on the backs, no here you goes, no attaboys, right? It's just you and your partner, and we are here to film your misery. That's why when people are like, oh, I heard they help you out and they do this for you, and they're there to make sure you don't die.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to record your misery,
okay,
and all the hardship that comes with that. Wow. That's what makes the show exciting and unique. So helping you does not coincide with that mission set, right? So giving you food and water and all this other stuff does not coincide with them. The idea behind the show,
mm-hmm.
the drama. The excitement of the show is when people are like passing out because they don't have any food, or, you know, they're yelling at each other because they're hangry, you know, like that's what creates the show. So nobody's there helping you. Once you realize that, you like start to go to that kind of panic state, like, oh man, you know, like this is on. I'm like out here for real. And so then my relationship with air came back to what we were talking about earlier, meditation. My understanding that all my systems are influenced by oxygen, right? So when you get stressed out, you start breathing a different way. So first I had to, one, get more oxygen in my system so my body could perform physically correctly. And then I had to get oxygen. I had to control how the oxygen influenced my system in order to maintain a mental state that was going to allow me to perform, logically.
Yeah.
Right. And not out of fear and not out of anxiety. And so being able to understand that initial relationship with air. And so within those 3 minutes, it's not just, oh, I don't have oxygen in my body, so I go brain dead that 3 minutes. It's a lot of things that 3 minute represents. That 3 minutes represent you being able to take back control of your mental faculties, which also is going to influence your physical faculties, and use your breath as a means and a gateway to do that, right? And that's where the meditation comes in, controlling your breathing, understanding your relationship with your breathing, understanding the relationship between your breath and your body, and then how to control that. You know, what's your count? You know, inhale, retention, exhale, suspension, things of that nature. Something that I've learned through my ninjutsu training, but also through my yogic training, right? So these are, that's a very important skill and a very important knowledge, and most people don't think about it. They just say, well, 3 minutes without air, if there was a gas attack, you would die. Or if you were drowned, you know, if you were underwater and you started to drown, then you have 3 minutes before your brain stops functioning. You know, they go through those portions, but they don't go through the depth of what really, 3 minutes without air or understanding your relationship with oxygen is to you being able to perform correctly.
So when you got on the show, at what point did this click in? This is with my observation, looking at things from sofa coach kind of perspective. The individuals who went there physically, what you would appear to be physically prepared and with an attitude of dominance and a little bit of a swagger. I mean, I've even seen some episodes where some of the individuals on there look like they were auditioning for something bigger. They tend not to last long.
Yeah.
And I could see where that's possibly part and parcel due to the fact that they didn't go there with the right mindset, right mentality. They went there thinking, I'm going to dominate this. Or they went there thinking that it was, like you said, when you first got there, I'm going to get some help in some way, form, or fashion. Mm-hmm. So at what point, I know you said, you know, things start to change, and you, because you broke it down to the level of where you were talking about how you were breathing. If they dropped you off at noon,
mm-hmm.
how soon after that did it click and say, okay, I have to shift not only my environment, my physical environment, but my perspective, and start thinking things from an analytical, strategic standpoint? How soon did that transformation take place?
Immediately. It was like, it was like, hello, my name is Hakeem. Oh, hello, your name is Phaedra. Oh, shit.
Okay. Okay.
So it was like immediately, like, okay. Yo, this is game on, for okay. real. And that was because it was after that meeting, like, you think something else is going to happen. Like, they're going to say, oh, well, now you need to, you know, do this and we got this set up for you. And no, it's for real. Yeah. It's real. And you're out there and they want to start filming that misery. So then it's like game on. It was actually 2:00 in the afternoon.
Okay.
And it was going to get dark at like 7:00. So they gave us a map in our little satchel and we had to like navigate to where an area and then set up some sort of camp for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to do all that in like, you know, 5 hours or 4 hours, right? So it was like, wow.
How far was the camp from the drop-off site?
I can't remember the distance now, but it was like probably it took us another 2 hours to get to where we needed to be. And that's because you have no shoes on, right? And you have no clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes the perspective of how fast you're able to move. You don't know where you are. You're trying to navigate on the map. You're stepping on things that are stabbing your feet every 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your, you know, every bush, every branch is scraping your skin up, you know. So you're moving at a slower pace. And so, you know, and you're on the side of a mountain. So you're going up and down and over all types of stuff. So, yeah, it was, it took a while. And then once we got there, we had to build a shelter or start a fire or something that was going to help us last throughout the night, which was another thing. That first night was probably one of the coldest I've ever been in my whole entire life because we had no clothes. We barely had enough time to throw a shelter together and grab enough firewood to last us the night. And we basically stayed up all night trying to stoke the fire.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So you talked about air and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
What other things did you find that really mattered when you didn't have anything, you didn't have the creature comforts? I'm pretty sure it's food and stuff, but immediately after air, what was next?
So that goes back to what we were talking about with walking and all of the clothes and all of the scratches from getting hit with like branches and stuff like that, and then having to survive that night with a fire and barely a shelter. And shelter is the next one.
Mm-hmm.
My partner and I argued all day about like, well, is shelter more important than fire? And I was like, look, you know, cavemen survive, or whatever, man, survive without fire for, you know, ever. That's how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are able to, you know, figure out what fire was and how to transport it and how to make it. And so they were doing that with shelter.
Facts.
Facts, exactly. And they lived like animals. They got that from animals.
Yeah.
Can a squirrel make a damn fire? Hell no. Right? Nope. If it can, then it's not long before a squirrel's gonna be trying to take some stuff over, right? So
planted the squirrels.
Yeah. So you know, they can't make fire. Birds can't make fire, but they survive. They survive by making nests for themselves. So I kept saying, look, I don't know anything about the weather patterns out here. I don't know when it's going to rain. I don't know how cold it gets at night. We need to build a shelter. I know I can survive in a good, well-made shelter. And she was like, no, let's do a fire. Let's do a fire. Let's do a fire. I'm like, if it starts raining, who's going to keep that fire alive? How are we going to keep that fire alive? You underestimate the value of, or the importance and the hardship it is to get enough fire to last a 13, 14 hour night, right? You got to get enough firewood for that timeline. And that, when you don't have any shoes on, takes forever, right? Once we did finally get a fireplace and a good shelter, we spent most of the day collecting firewood and would burn it all that night. And then the next day have to do it again. It was crazy. So shelter is super important for a multitude of reasons. Your first layer of shelter is your skin. Your second layer is your clothing, right? And then, so having the right clothing on, and then also the protection for your feet. So that's a layer of shelter. And then after that, you start looking at like what structures you have, whether it be like a building or a tent or whatever. And so shelter took on a whole new role to me, really understanding the dynamics of shelter and why it was so important, beyond just having a tent or having a poncho or something like that, which I would have had if I was in the military. Now I had to understand what it was like to be nude, living out in the cut, you know, and building a shelter that was going to allow me to maintain my core body temperature and the core body temperature of my partner in one of the coldest places, you know, in the world, mm-hmm. the Himalayan Mountains, mm-hmm. high up there, you know? So, yeah, no joke.
Okay. So we got air. Mm-hmm. Controlling your breathing, were you thinking about shelter? And I know you mentioned fire. Would you say that's probably the next thing, or is there something else you think is more important than before fire?
I think fire, you know, it's really thermal regulation. So you're trying to regulate your body temperature, mm-hmm. right? So and maintain a core body temperature so you can keep some homeostasis, right? Mm-hmm. So this idea of, you know, being able to maintain your core temperature is important. And so fire can be valuable if you are in a area where you know it may not rain a lot and now you're using it to cook or something of that nature. You might need to stay warm a little bit, but you need to have a means to keep that fire alive or a shelter. And so they're interchangeable. You know, the best way we as human beings found to do it is we have a house with a fireplace. So we combine them, which is ultimately what me and my partner did towards the end, was that we were like, okay, you want fire, I want shelter. Let's combine the two, just like human beings are doing in their own homes. And so if you're in a, let's say, tropical environment where, you know, it's warm out, you know, you may not need shelter as much as you need a fire for cooking and light and to keep bugs and animals and stuff like that away. You know, so it really is just understanding the dynamic of what the importance of the two are and what they do mm-hmm. and what they provide for you, and then knowing how to incorporate them in any type of method of survival.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, I'm thinking when I watch the show sometimes, it seems like one of the main things or challenges that they face other than shelter is water.
Yeah.
And whether they can drink something that looks clean or not, or how do they go about making sure something is clean? And I've seen a lot of different methods of getting water or preparing water they choose to drink. And it looks like sometimes that works, and sometimes that gets them to the point where they tap out of the show.
Mm-hmm.
How important was water preparation and storage for you guys?
So there was no storage. That would have been cool if I could have just popped out a fridge out there the cooler. Or something. Yeah. But you know, figuring out the water situation was difficult, and my partner actually ended up drinking some bad water and getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want any spoilers if you hadn't seen it. But you know, being able to understand water and find clean water, or at least get water that's clean enough for you to drink, is very important, because it can make or break you. I mean, the truth is that most people in our normal average society are underhydrated anyway. We're dehydrated anyway. So the average human being in America is dehydrated. We're drinking all of these Coca-Colas and coffees and things that actually work as a diuretic, that, you know, that is pulling hydration from our body, and we're not replenishing it properly. So a lot of people are operating under less than optimal conditions. It's like 4%. To be dehydrated even to a 4% level will have an actual mental and emotional and physical toll on your body, right? So it's really important to make sure that you're getting enough water, right? And we have it so easy. We just turn on the damn water fountain and get some water, right? Or get some bottles from the gas station or whatever. It's super easy, but still people aren't doing it, because it's also super easy to get a Coke or something like that, something that tastes better. So water, super important. What we ended up doing out there was that she ended up drinking from a source that she could, a water source that she couldn't see where the water was coming from, which is one of the rules. If you can't see where that water's coming from, don't mess with it, right? And we had a small debate when she found that water source. She was like, oh, I'm going to drink this, because you know, she was getting it really bad right at the onset. She, you know, it was the altitude and the heat, you know, because the sun was out and we didn't have any cover at first. But when that sun went away, it got like extremely cold. And she was like just starting to get a headache because she wasn't feeling well. And we found this little bit of water and she was like, I'm going to drink it. And I was like, well, I don't know where this is coming from. So, you know, that's one of the rules. Don't drink it if you don't know where it's coming from. And she was like, no, I just need it. I know my body. And she drank it, and it just went downhill from there.
Mm-hmm.
But later, I was able to see or find a water source where it was dripping out the side of a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see it was coming out of the side of the cliff, which means that it was filtering through the rock and the sediment in the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that's how we make filters. We make filters that clean water by catching particles as the water moves through. So any of those bad particles that are bigger than the actual water itself will get trapped. The water molecule itself will get trapped in that sediment, and it allows the water through. So when I saw something like that, I was like, okay, this is good. So I started drinking that, but it was actually just dripping down. And I mean, literally, to get enough water, I would have to be there for an hour and a half just as the drips were falling into my mouth. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous. So I had to figure out another way for us to get some water. So then I said, well, what's the other thing? So we were next to a stream. And I was like, okay, that's cool, but I don't have any way to pull water from that stream and then boil it. Because unless I make some sort of bowl or something of that nature, which I could not, you know, which I wasn't able to do. And so I was like, okay, well, how did ancient man do water as well? And I was like, oh, well, a seep or a well, right? And so you can dig a seep or a well, and the rock and the sediment again will filter the water as it pulls through that well or through that sediment, and then it'll fill up that well, and then you can drink out of it.
Okay.
The reason not a stream is because we're in India. I don't know what the hell is upstream from where we are. Is there a cow in the stream crapping and peeing, and then it's filtering downstream, and now I'm drinking out of that water? So I didn't want to do that. But if I can build a well off the side of the stream, or a seep is what they call it, and let the water seep through the sediment and fill up, then that was it. And that's ultimately what I did. And every 4 days I would dig another seep, and then and then make sure I covered it up so that, you know, little bugs or birds or anything didn't crap in the water. So
now, so to make things clear, we're not saying that bodies of water in India are the only bodies of water that you don't want to get anything downstream from. You can do it right here in the good old US of A.
Yeah.
You better know what's upstream from you, because you don't know what you'll be drinking. So that's a good point. Now, on a lot of those shows, food is a luxury.
Yeah.
To the point that just like you see people, you really see the fortitude of individuals who are able to get some water sources, but they can go for a long time without eating anything of sustenance, and, you know, anything, you know, the bugs, certain leaves or plants, or, I mean, God forbid you catch a fish or something.
Yeah.
At what point did you guys realize, okay, we got shelter, we got some water, now getting, you know, moving up on the hierarchy of needs, I would love to get a little bit of grub now. How did that come into play?
So we were trying to stay active on looking for food the whole time.
Okay.
But because it was so cold out there and we were out in the cut, finding food was very difficult. We ended up eating some snails, some worms. You know, we end up finding like a dead bird that we end up eating. I mean, it was just like, you know, whatever we could find. You know, I end up killing a snake. We ate that. And, you know, but total, they totaled it up. We each had about 800 calories in 3 weeks.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. You know, the average calorie intake or caloric intake, they say for an average American should be somewhere above 1,200, right? So 1,200 to 2,100, depending on your size and if you're male or female. And we had 800 in 3 weeks. So I lost 40 pounds in 3 weeks.
That's less than a fast food meal. That's less than a fast food meal. That's less than a hamburger and fry in certain restaurants.
Yep.
Oh, for 3 weeks.
3 weeks. And still had to provide shelter. And still had to dig a seep for water. And had to collect firewood all day. And then stay up most of the night stoking the fire and keeping the fire alive. I mean, it was for real.
Okay, hold on a second. I don't want to skim over this. So it's at 800 calories.
800.
For those of you listening, next time you grab a candy bar or a bag of chips or anything that you're going to eat that you buy in the store, just flip over the label and look at the calorie count of that item. And think about the fact that during this time, these individuals had 800 calories over the course of 3 weeks, 21 days. That is amazing. That's something that shouldn't be skimmed over. I mean, from the fact it shows that you guys, you know, stuck in there and did what you had to do, but also it shows it's a testament to the human body and the things that you think you can and cannot do. That is amazing.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's for real. You know, it's, it is, you know, there have been people who have gone, I think one of the longest times was like 60 to 90 days without food, right? Now, they weren't out there like building shelters and stuff, but these were like, holy men or things of that nature that were out there like, you know, doing some sort of meditative practice. But they lived for a very long time without food. And also without water. So yeah, the human body is capable of magnificent things, but I wouldn't suggest you do that, right? Just go out there and like, unless you're naked and afraid, you know, I wouldn't suggest you go out there and do that.
Going to naked and afraid, you know, diet plan.
Yeah, make sure you have your, you know, you make sure you have food and water set aside at your house in case something with an emergency pops up, and you don't have to worry about that because you're not going to operate as effectively without food, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your body, for a short period of time, your body goes to a state called ketosis, right? Which is part of like the keto diet and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so where you will feel like you have a lot of energy because your body will create new sources and it'll start to feed on itself for energy. But you don't want to do that for a long period of time. And because then eventually your energy will go down because you'll start losing physical resources within your body to feed your muscles and things of that nature to feed your body. So it'll start losing that. It'll start eating through that fat. It'll start converting, you know, your muscles into energy, and you don't want that, mm-hmm. right? And a perfect example is that when I got back before, most days I'll wake up in the morning and I'll do 70 push-ups right off the bat,
mm-hmm.
right? I'll roll out of bed, hit the floor, do 70 push-ups right off the bat. Before I went to, Naked and Afraid, it was the same. I was doing 60 push-ups in a minute, right? One push-up a second. And, when I got back from Naked and Afraid, for the first 2 months back, I could not do one push-up.
Hmm.
My body had lost so much mass and so much muscle
yeah.
that I couldn't even do a push-up. And it was nuts. Yeah. I was like, wow. It felt like I was literally pushing the world, you know, like I get down there and it was crazy. It was crazy.
How'd you get up?
Help. Help. I had one of those little like beds that you hit the button and it raises up. So I didn't do it. When I returned, I took 2 weeks off of work. And I just stay home and I couldn't eat anything because your stomach shrinks so much, you know? So I was eating very little every day. And it's just funny how your body adapts and changes to those aspects.
Oh, wow. So you spoke about this before about the law of threes.
Yeah.
And I know one of the things you said, 3 weeks without socialization or a tribal community or engagement with another person. You had somebody there, but was that, were you guys suffering from the fact, I mean, sometimes it's almost like you deal with it in couples, but they always have someone, they can always leave. Did you find that you guys needed the socialization of each other, but at the same time you were getting on each other's nerves because you were the only people that you were seeing, kind of thing?
I think it is duplistic in that way. I think it is that dualism in the sense that on top of that, there's so many things you're going through, yeah. right? I mean, like, come on, dude, let your girlfriend and your wife not get a hamburger or food for a day, for a few hours. You include it,
mm-hmm.
yeah. you know, and you'll start hitting some conflict real soon, right? And that hangriness comes up, and then the next thing you know, you start, you know, small things start annoying you. And man, I just need to get some food because I, you know, your face annoys me right now. You know, like,
I don't divulge their name, but that candy bar commercial dedicated a whole campaign, a marketing campaign,
yeah.
to that concept. So yeah. that makes sense.
Yep. Yep. And so, you know, you get on each other's nerves, but we hit a lot of conflict, and I would always go back to this, like, yo, we don't have to like each other, but we need each other to survive. And that meant that not only using her as a resource and her using me as a resource to help collect firewood and things of that nature, but also as much as we didn't like each other, just having somebody to talk to and be able to just socialize with was also very important to our ability to deal, you know. And so that was another lesson. And I learned that also in the military. You don't always have to get along, you know. There were people in the military like we just did not get along, and we did not like each other. I want to say hate, but hate is a strong word, but we were arguing or fighting every second.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put a gun in your hand and you have to protect each other's back in the deserts of Iraq, then there's no one else that you can rely on more, and vice versa. And you will step it up. You know, if I am in country out there ready to defend. I can hate this person's guts when we're back at the, you know, at the hooch, right? But then all of a sudden, you know, we're out there, and if anyone challenges that dude or tries to hurt that dude, I'm gonna put him down, and vice versa. And that's because there is that camaraderie when you're going through something like that, that spirit of cooperation that grows, and that you start to rely and see difference, you know, see that cooperation is the way that you're going to really succeed, right? To see that there is more to a person in moments of hardship than, you know, just the fact that you don't like the way they feel about your color, or just the fact that you don't like the way that they feel about your personality. There's something more to it than that. This is about survival. This is about both of us being able to survive and to thrive, right? And so that was another lesson out there. That socialization. Tribes are important, right? And people have known that, you know, for thousands of years. That's why we've made it this far, is building tribes, cooperation, growing together.
That's really cool. I want to... That's a subject for another day that I think we should really explore in understanding the mechanics of that, because because my interactions with people in the military, they rarely speak of race. Mm. They speak of being green. Mm-hmm. We're all green, and how that can trend. But at the same time, sometimes those same individuals, when they're reacclimated into society, they resort back to race or ethnicity, mm-hmm. or whatever their bias were before. I'd really love to delve into that a little bit further. But that's a topic for another day. With this particular topic, sir, you being naked and afraid, what were the major lessons? Because I know you talked about a lot of different things that you experienced when you were there and how you coped. But other than coming back with less muscle mass, I know there had to be some things that you left that experience with that you still take with you to today. What were those?
Yeah. I almost wanted to leave it all behind when I got back. I was like,
leave
everything.
Like,
live like Tarzan, Black Tarzan.
Seriously.
Yeah, for real, you know? Because it was like, there was something peaceful about it. Mm-hmm. You know, first off, you change. You go through, like, your hearing increases, your eyesight increases, your sense of smell increases. You almost become wild, like an animal. But really, it's a portion of your senses in your body that you're not used to exploring because you've never been there. So your brain starts saying, hey, we need to increase our awareness and our abilities on all these different levels in order to thrive in this environment. So now I can smell things that I couldn't smell before, and I can see things that I couldn't smell before. I can hear bugs in the ground like a damn animal, right? And, you know, so there was that. Then there was these truths that were unveiled, these masks that got dropped. We spend so much time hiding from ourselves in society. We get on, you know, every 2 seconds, Facebook, what's happening in the world? What's happening in the world? You want to know what we spend the less time figuring out what's happening with? Us, right?
Yeah.
We spend more time figuring out what's happening with everything else and less time figuring out what's happening with us. And when you are stripped of everything, food, water, shelter, and you're out there in the middle of the cut and you can't hide anymore, and you don't have a shovel to bury things down with, you don't have the shovel of Facebook, you don't have the shovel of bills, you don't have the shovel of relationships, you just got you, then all the dirt falls away.
Yeah.
And you start to really see who you are. Mm-hmm. So when I came back, I had this deep relationship and connection with my deeper self, and I also had these senses, mm-hmm. that were heightened, and I realized that I was capable, more capable of as a human being than I had ever been before in my life. And that the things that were surrounding me in normal society were actually making me ordinary. And I had just come back from an extraordinary experience and realized that I had lived as an extraordinary being. So now I'm subjecting myself to being ordinary again, right? Dulling down my senses, dulling down my abilities, my passion, my strength, my spirituality. All of that stuff was dulled down by all of these distractions, by all of this junk food, by all this stuff. I'm sorry, I'm going back right now. I'm like reliving it right now as I'm saying it. And I had had a taste of what it was like to be free of all of that, and still all of the fears of I can't survive, all of the anxiety of I can't do this, I need this clothes, I need this house, I need this car, I need these friends on Facebook. Nope. God gave me everything I need.
So would you compare it to like the walkabout experience that, you know?
That's exactly what it's like. Yeah. I've not been on a walkabout, but from what I understand of a walkabout, that's kind of what the naked and afraid experience was for me. And not everybody has that experience. Some people it is about the television. Some people it is about, like, you know, oh man, I was able to do it, you know. And yes, I was happy and ecstatic that I was able to do it, but really it changed me as an individual. Mm-hmm. So much so that I had, as you know, I bought 60 acres of land and started a nonprofit so that I can teach people and give people the opportunity to live that experience. Unfortunately, not everybody wants to go out there and suffer right off the bat. They need that slow, and that's why we created Survive U, Survive University, so that people can learn skill sets and then slowly work their way to being able to sustain in a more primitive way so that they can learn some deeper lessons if they so choose to. If not, they just want to learn how to just kind of connect with nature, you know, then we can do that too.
Yeah.
So, that was my ultimate lesson out there, you know, it was really doing that. But, you know, I have like 5 specific lessons that we can share before we end the podcast.
We can definitely do that. We will save that additional information for the Patreon account.
Okay.
This is a plug real quick, you guys. We love to hear from you. We love your support. We're going to include these extra 5 tips that Hakeem wants to share, but they're going to be on our Patreon account. All right, my preps, that's our episode for today. We learned a lot of information, had a lot of laughs, but got some good nuggets of information that you can take with you. Learned about Mr. Hakeem Isler. When you see him on the episode of Naked and Afraid, you understand what he actually went through and how he prepared for that. It wasn't a role, it was a real life experience. And the lessons he took away from that, you can use in your everyday life. We want to thank you for listening and building your education in preparation with us. Please remember, real survival is not about what you can do as an individual, but when you empower those around you. Due to this, we ask that you share the podcast with friends, and we always appreciate a review. In addition, if you're looking for training in fields related to preparation, you can join one of our courses on surviveuniversity.com. That way you can get ready, be ready, and always stay ready. Till next time.